right, Bill Barty, we're back on Carolina Outdoors, and both of us being old farm boys know not only about man's best friend, but his right-hand man on the farm, and that is the dog.
You aren't kidding. As the Carolina Outdoors broadcast up and down the eastern seaboard, around the world, 365 days a year, this segment, Don's going to take special interest, just not for two farm boys like you and I, but also all the hunters who are partner with dogs. And, of course, these two species have partnered for millennia in furthering each other. But our next guest studies this and has written a book about this. What's it like to be a dog? And we're going to bring Dr. Gregory Burns onto the Carolina Outdoors. He's a neuroscientist at Emory University and, of course, New York Times best-selling author. Welcome to the Carolina Outdoors.
Hey, great to be here.
Well, listen, are you falling in the long line of dog scientists from Pavlov to the guy who trained Spuds McKenzie, the beer dog?
Maybe. I guess I'd feel pretty good in being in that company.
Well, tell us the difference in what you're studying and what somebody like a behavioral psychologist like Pavlov studied way back when.
Yeah, so I'm a neuroscientist by training, and before I got involved in what we call the Dog Project here in Atlanta, I used to study human brains. And so we would put people in an MRI scanner and have them do various computer tasks and try to figure out how their brains respond to things like risk and reward and punishment. Kind of sounds familiar if you try to train a dog, right?
Exactly.
So about 6 years ago, I got this crazy idea. Why can't we just train a dog to go in an MRI machine? You know, I saw pictures of military working dogs jumping out of helicopters, and I thought, you know, man, if dogs can be trained to jump out of helicopters, it should be a piece of cake to train them to go in an MRI so we could see how their brains work and ultimately what they're thinking, especially what they're thinking of us. And so that's how this project started, and I started with my own dog, and since then it's grown to almost 100 dogs that we've now trained for MRI, and we're doing kind of these amazing tasks and trying to figure out what they're thinking.
Hey, why is that important? Why everybody who's listening, who's a dog lover anyway, thinks that they know their dog and the personality. Why is it important for us to get those dogs in an MRI machine to study what they're thinking?
Yeah, that's a great question. And the issue is, you know, everyone's an expert in dogs. Anyone who lives with a dog, you know, thinks they know what the dog is thinking. And the problem is all we have to go by is their outward behavior. And then we tend to project our own interpretations or feelings on the dog. So kind of a classic example that I see all the time is if you're trying to train a dog to do something and the dog doesn't do it, whatever it is, why is that? Is it that the dog doesn't understand, or the dog understands but doesn't want to, or the dog is afraid? Sometimes it's just impossible to say because they can't tell you what they're thinking. A human can. So this is why I think it's really important to use these new technologies to kind of get inside their psyches and really see what's going on. And we can make conclusions, and we're getting close to what we call brain decoding or mind decoding and really reading out what they're experiencing inside.
Now, do they have a similar process to us? I mean, only thing I can relate to is what's going on in my own head. So is the same thing going on in my dog's mind?
So a lot of the experiments that we do now are the same types of experiments that we do in humans. So usually these things involve, you know, showing some kind of stimulus to the dog. Maybe it's associated with a reward. But we do other things like show them pictures of people and dogs. And in every one of these experiments that we've done, we find similar responses in dog brains as in human brains, at least to the extent that we can identify the similar structures. So what I would say is that when we see similar responses in the dog's brain as to a human's brain, yeah, they're experiencing things very similar to us. The big difference, of course, is that they don't have an internal monologue to label everything.
Sounds good to me.
So an internal monologue to label things. So if you show a dog a newspaper, he doesn't know it's a newspaper that you would read. He knows it is either something to pee on or to get swatted on the butt with.
Well, right. But and kind of the key thing that's, you know, similar is that he probably has some kind of emotional reaction depending on his view of it, whether it's positive or negative. And that kind of core emotion, we think, probably feels the same to him as that emotion feels to us.
All right, let me go a little different direction with you, because this is something I'm really curious about. I've always said that dogs are the most manipulated animal on earth in that they've been bred for specific jobs and routines. For example, bird dogs, I always say a good bird dog is a nose dragging a dog around. Can you measure any of those kind of things among different breeds and see the differences, say, in a border collie versus a poodle or anything like that? I mean, do they truly have a different thought process, or what drives them to do their own job so well?
Yeah, so part of the problem is there are so many different breeds of dogs. There's hundreds of them, and you would need kind of an enormous study to compare the breeds. So we haven't done that. But what we have done, we have focused on actually in one study a very specific type of dog, and that is service dogs. So we teamed up with Canine Companions for Independence, which trains service dogs. And those dogs are all mixtures of golden retrievers and labs. And so they're all the same breed. And what we tried to determine was, by scanning their brains on a particular task, could we predict which of those dogs would end up being good service dogs? And the answer is we can. And in fact, we can do it even a little bit better than the trainers can. But to get to the answer to your question, what it points out is that even within a breed that is so similar, the dogs are all similar, there's still a tremendous amount of variation of, you know, like, you know, just because a dog is a lab doesn't mean that it's going to be good at lab type things. There's just a huge range of variation, kind of like people. People have different skill sets.
Awesome. Dr. Greg Burns is joining us. He's a neuroscientist at Emory University studying what's it like to be a dog. And Dr. Burns, that study has led to your book, What's It Like to Be a Dog? And it's kind of insightful, empathetic, and funny, but it also led you into other species. Tell us about the book and the animals that weren't dogs that are written about in the book.
Yeah, so the more I got into studying dogs, it made me curious about other animals. Now, there's no other animal, I think, probably on the planet that you could actually train to go in an MRI and enjoy it. So we started these other projects, and they were basically using the brains of animals that, you know, either died from natural causes or ended up in rehab centers that ultimately died there, and we would get their brains and study them. And these animals include things like dolphins and sea lions. We've lately also been studying the brains of coyotes. But probably the animal that I got kind of just fell down the rabbit hole studying is this extinct animal called the Tasmanian tiger. The last one probably died in 1936. But if you go on the internet and you look up Tasmanian tigers, you'll see this creature that looks strikingly like a coyote, maybe kind of a dog-like thing. But they're really distantly related. So I got fascinated by this to answer the question of, just because this animal looked like a dog or a coyote, what was its brain like? And so it led to this two-year adventure searching for the brains of these animals that might exist in jars. And what we found was actually their brains are quite different. And we can infer a little bit about what that animal's life was like.
Wow. Plus, getting a dog in an MRI machine, I'm sure, is a whole lot easier than getting a sea lion in an MRI machine.
Is there anything out there that we totally misunderstand about our dogs? I mean, we think we know them. We look them in the eye. They look at us. We can tell when they're happy, they're sad. Are there things that we totally mistaken?
I think, you know, for the people that live with dogs, and you know, I bet many of your listeners are dog people, I think our intuitions are often very correct. Because as you point out, you know, dogs and humans have co-evolved over probably the last 20,000 years. And so there's been kind of this joining of our evolutionary paths, you know, in some way that we are well matched to each other. So I think our intuitions are often correct. I think sometimes As the science evolves, we change those intuitions. And so, you know, dominance theory has kind of come and gone. You know, we now look at social relationships with dogs in kind of a different light, because the dominance hierarchy was based on kind of old studies of wolves that really weren't that great. So, you know, the field's evolving, but I think our intuitions are usually right.
Is the partnership between the species evolving too? I mean, you mentioned the service dogs and the, you know, how that is rubber meets the road in many instances. That has definitely been an industry of growth. Is that just part of the relationship evolution of human and canine?
Yeah, completely. So, I mean, if you look back 100 years or 200 years, dogs lived totally different lives around humans. I mean, you would never find a dog in a person's house 100 years ago, and certainly not 200 years ago. You know, they lived outside, as they do in most parts of the world. But, you know, with modern society, with urban society, you know, dogs have come into our homes. And so, yeah, they're evolving, too. We're evolving. We're selecting for different features in dogs than 100 years ago. Most people don't need a herding dog. Most people do not need a hunting dog. They need and want dogs that are companions and have different social traits than those other types of dogs.
Dr. Gregory Burns is his name. He's got a new book, What's It Like to Be a Dog? It's sold where books are sold. Dr. Burns, thank you so much for being on with the Outdoor Guys here on the Carolina Outdoors.